It's half past eight.
It's 8:30 New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike sets up a panel of four wizards of quiz for you to try to stump. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And I'll light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please, as always, is entirely unprepared and unrehearsed. Tonight, we have with us Mr. Franklin P. Adams of Conning Tower fame, and his partner in wisdom, Mr. John Kieran, the sports authority and possessor of millions of facts. And as our guests, we are glad to welcome back Mr. Lewis Bromfield, the famous novelist, and Miss Margaret Leach, whose most recent book, Reveille in Washington, is a Book of the Month Club choice and a bestseller. Mr. Bromfield, by the way, I must mention, is in impeccable evening clothes, despite the fact that he was warned that this was a completely informal program. Remember, for each question that's missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Well, we're off with a question coming to us from Miss Edna Fall of Hazleton, Iowa. Can you, Miss Leach and gentlemen, make up a menu for us, a menu for a meal, from nursery rhymes that happen to mention foods? And it would be nice to begin with the first course and end with the last. Mr. Adams, want to start us off?
The first course?
Well, I'll take any course.
I go first.
Have you, Mr. Bromfield?
Peas porridge hot, peas porridge... Peas porridge hot, peas porridge cold.
Yes, that's two dishes of peas porridge to begin with. That's very good.
Soup to begin with.
That's fine for breakfast. Mr. Adams, what was the one you had in mind?
The Queen of Hearts, the King of Hearts, he stole some tarts.
Knave of Hearts.
Knave of Hearts. Yes, that gives us tarts.
That's dessert.
That is dessert. You're through. Miss Leach?
Curds and pie.
What's the nursery rhyme which contains...
Little Miss Muffet was eating it.
Little Miss Muffet was eating
then.
Curds and whey. That's right. That gives us a... we're over-accented on cereals tonight. Karen?
Want some meat?
Sure.
Taffy was a Welshman. Taffy was a thief. Taffy came to my house and stole a roast of beef.
Yes, I was waiting for Yes, there is. He starts. That's very good, Mr. Bromfield.
I've still got an entree.
Swell.
420 blackberries baked into a pie.
Yes, that's a very good one. And rare, too. Very hard to get. How about a beverage? We haven't had anything to drink.
Jack and Jill went up the hill.
Yes, rather simple meal. The friendly cow.
Some salad there, too.
I beg your pardon?
Some salad in that one.
In what one?
Vinegar and brown paper.
That's right. That's right. A lovely salad that makes. A little Jack Horner, of course, with a Christmas pie would give us some extra dessert. How about this one, gentlemen? This comes from Florence True of Elgin, Illinois. Can you identify the following American ladies? I have three of them here. See if we can get two out of three. Which one made such a charming hostess that a general delayed pursuing a defeated army? This is from our own history. One who was such a charming hostess that a general... Mr. Bromfield, is that your hand that was up?
I don't know, I know her name, but it was on Murray Hill in the Battle of Long Island.
Well, what do you think her name was?
Mrs. Baldwin...
Murray.
Murray, that's yes. On Murray Hill.
That's quite right. Now, whose extravagant shopping embarrassed the President of the United States? Miss Leach?
That of Mrs. Lincoln.
Yes. Why was she given to such hysterias of shopping, would you say, Miss Leach?
It really amounted almost to an abnormal thing in the case of Mrs. Lincoln. She just loved to spend money.
Yes, that doesn't sound too abnormal to Mr. Kieran, probably. Which one, an American lady, sent a cipher message which led to the Battle of Bull Run? I guess this must be the first Battle of Bull Run. There were two. Miss Leach, was that your hand up?
Well, that was Mrs. Greenhow.
Who was Mrs. Greenhow?
Mrs. Greenhow was a Washington Society woman, a Marylander who was very ardent for the South.
Yes.
And who established a cipher code with one of the Confederate Army officers and sent the news to Beauregard that the Federals were going to advance.
And was that which led to the defeat of the Federals in this first battle of the Civil War?
Yes.
And has that been generally known for a long time? I don't remember ever having come across it in my own history books.
Well, it has been published.
It has been published.
Yes.
Well, you folks probably read it, but I haven't ever come across it. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. No, it gives us 3 out of 3. I beg your pardon. And sends us on to this one from Dr. Matthew Klein of New York City. This is a question entirely about John and Lionel Barrymore, which will no doubt please John and Lionel Barrymore. Can you identify these plays or movies in which John and Lionel appeared together? It so happens that each of these incidents that I shall describe deals with a prison scene. See if you can recollect them. Get 2 out of 3. Now, in the first case, John is imprisoned for life for killing Lionel with a cane. Mr. Adams.
Peter Ibbotson.
Peter Ibbotson, yes. Who was Peter? Who played Peter Ibbotson in Peter Ibbotson? Which of them? Remember?
John.
That's right. And Colonel Ibbotson, his uncle, was Lionel. Now, in the second case, John has Lionel imprisoned as a madman in order to get Lionel's girlfriend away from him, Mr. Bromfield.
The Jest.
The Jest. That's quite right. Who played the parts there, do you remember?
They were brothers in that also. And Lionel was what's called a condottiere. And the younger brother was devoted to art, music, literature, and women. And the older one didn't like
yes,
it.
Yes, what a firm.
In the order name?
Oh, vice versa.
That gives us 2 out of 2. Now, how about this one? Lionel allows John to escape while he's taking him to prison for grand larceny. As he's taking him to prison, he permits him to escape. Any of you remember that? We're safe on this question. It's from a movie, Arsène Lupin, and John plays Lupin the crook, and Lionel is the Guerchard, the detective. That doesn't come back to any of you, Miss Leach, or gentlemen? How about this? From John P. Finn of Two Gardens, Long Island. This is a geographical question. Get 2 out of 3 if you can. What countries have these subdivisions, among other subdivisions? Assam, Bihar, and Punjab would be found where, Mr. Curran?
It's in India.
In India, quite right. Where would you find the districts of Keewatin, Franklin, and Mackenzie? Mr. Kieran again.
I think that'd be in Canada.
That's quite right, Mr. Kieran, in Canada. And where would you find the districts or divisions of Kyrgyz, Azerbaijan, Kazakh, and Turkmen? Mr. Bromfield.
Russia.
In Russia, yes. Those are all the lesser-known states of the Union of Socialist Soviet Republics. Now, how about this one from Ethelyn Underwood Dowling of Woodside, New York? Again, get 2 out of 3. In what poems are these pairs of adjectives to be found? Here's the first pair. Contrite, humble. Mr. Curran.
That's in Kipling's Recessional.
Can you give us the lines?
An humble and a contrite heart.
Well, that's the line. That's quite right. What's the one that goes before it?
Just forgotten which particular verse it is. If you start me, I'll give you the whole thing.
No, I couldn't do that. Still stands thine ancient
sacrifice.
Yes. Right. Well, I'm sure that Mr. Kieran could give us the entire poem if pressed, or even if not pressed. How about this pair? Fearful, mournful. Where would you find that pair of adjectives? Fearful, mournful. It's a very well-known poem that many of us memorize in school, I think. And as a matter of fact, to give you a hint, Mr. Kieran?
Would that be a Longfellow?
No.
Well,
no, it is not. Miss Leach, any idea? It's about a character that appears in your book. It's from Walt Whitman's O Captain, My Captain. O Captain, My Captain, our fearful trip is done. And a little later on, he says, I with mournful tread walk the deck. My captain lies fallen cold and dead. Remember that now, Miss Leach? Now, how about this one? That gives us one wrong. Rare, perfect. Where would you find that? Mr. Adams.
James Russell Lowell.
That's quite right. What poem?
What is so rare as a day in June?
That's right. And what's the poem called, Mr. Adams?
The Vision of Sir Launfal.
That's right. What is so rare as a day in June? And then how does it go on? I have to get the word perfect in.
There never come perfect.
That's right, yeah. Adams. Thank you very much. How about this one from James L. Jowett of Norristown, Pennsylvania? I think we ought to get all on this. Now, you're going to hear a newspaper boy whom we have imported for the occasion, recite some headlines for us. Well, construct a headline about the news events of the past from the words that you hear in the following extras. Tell us what is being said. Let's have the first.
Wednesday, out of 49 for a fair Serbia.
What's going on, gentlemen? Any idea? Mr. Curran.
If I understood him, it had to do with the First World War.
Go ahead.
Well, an assassination of by Gabriel Princeps of...
He couldn't tell. He didn't say all that, Curran.
Well, that was at Sarajevo, wasn't it?
Yes,
the assassination
yes.
of the Archduke of Austria in Sarajevo by... Whatever,
Gabriel
Princeps.
You're giving us the body of the story, not the headline. More than we bargained for. That's, of course, quite right, Mr. Curran. And perhaps our newsboy speaks too intelligibly. Mix it up on the next one, will you?
What's the? About a man to take care of home in Manorica.
I hope everybody got that. Mr. Adams?
That might be have to do with the rips.
With the what?
The rips. Sounds like Morocco to me.
Sounds like Morocco to you?
Morocco.
Morocco?
Yes.
Somehow I still hear you saying Morocco. Mr. Curran.
I think that would be cried along in September 1927. Would that be about right?
What
Babe Ruth hit his 60th home run?
Yes, in Morocco, Mr. Adams. All right.
Morocco to me still.
Despite Mr. Curran's perfect score on that, I'll have to count the staff as a whole wrong on account of Mr. Adams' Moroccan complex. Let's have the next one.
Wednesday, and out of my land, the Dublin does it the wrong way.
Get it? Very easy. Do you want to retrieve yourself, Mr. Adams?
Yes, sir.
Morocco.
That is Mr. Corrigan.
Yes, landing in? Fez, I suppose.
Morocco bomb.
landing the wrong way in Dublin. But that gives us only 2 out of 3, sending $25 to Mr. Jowett, plus a set of the encyclopedia, courtesy of Lucky Strike.
Me.
That was owing entirely to you, Mr. Adams. Now, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out $25, and that means one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now Mr. Cross points out that North Carolina, not Hollywood, holds this week's record for premiere performances.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, on Tuesday of this week, the opening of the 1941 tobacco auctions was celebrated at 9 different North Carolina tobacco markets. And what happened down there will interest every smoker. On opening day, at every one of those tobacco markets, Lucky Strike paid well above the average market price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos, the kind that gives you a milder, better-tasting cigarette. Typical of these markets is Henderson, North Carolina, where on opening day, the American Tobacco Company paid 20% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 20% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought goes into Lucky's. Smokers, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So make the next package you buy Lucky Strike.
Brief and to the point as usual, Mr. Cross, just 57 seconds. Now, how about this one, Miss Leach and gentlemen, from Francis Williams Brown of Philadelphia. Who swore in each of these presidents for his first term? Who swore them in? The first case is that of Abraham Lincoln. Who swore in Mr. Lincoln? Miss Leach.
Chief Justice Taney.
Chief Justice Taney, yes. First name?
Begins with R.
Yes, it ends with R, too, Mr. Adams.
Roger.
That's right. How's that? Isn't that intelligent? That's quite right, Miss Leach. And how about Franklin D. Roosevelt? First term, remember, who swore Mr. Roosevelt in? Mr. Bromfield.
Chief Justice Hughes.
Chief Justice Charles Evans Hughes. That's quite right. And who swore in Mr. Calvin Coolidge for his first term? Mr. Curran.
His father.
Oh, that's the catch question. that's quite right, Mr. Curran. Mr. Coolidge's father?
It was up there. I believe he's a local justice of the peace, wasn't he? Or some local
in
official.
In V.T.
Yes, that's quite right. Mr. John C. Coolidge swore in his own son in a very dramatic ceremony that many of us will remember. Now, off the record, this isn't part of the question. Who could have sworn in the first president of the United States? Was there a chief justice then to swear in the president who swore in George Washington? Mr. Bromfield?
Well, there wasn't, but the chief justice marshal.
Well, I think that there wasn't at the time. I don't think Chief Justice Marshall was working away at the job at that time. No, it was Chancellor Livingston of New York State. And I suppose he must have been sworn in. Would he not have been sworn in then right here in New York at the time?
I think he was. He came to New York by coach for the ceremony.
Yes, I think that was the case. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. How about this one from Gretchen Newkirk of Fort Worth, Texas? I think we ought to get all on this. Well, who were the following people? They're all mentioned in poetry. Who was a child of scorn? A child of scorn. There's a look of recognition, Mr. Bromfield, on your face. No, it was despair. A child of scorn is... It's from a poem by Edwin Arlington Robinson called
Nineveh Chivvy.
Remember it now, Mr. Adams? Can you give us the verse in which...
Nineveh Chivvy, child of scorn.
That's right. grew lean while he assailed the seasons. He wept that he was ever born, and he had reasons. That's the way it goes. That gives us one wrong. How about a poor benighted heathen? Who in poetry was that? Mr. Adams.
That is one of Mr. Kieran's favorite authors, Joseph R. Kipling.
You say Joseph? Was that his first name?
Rudyard was his middle name.
Oh. You do know the darndest thing, Mr. Adams. And who exactly was this poor benighted heathen? Mr. Kieran, will you give us a little more?
Lazarusian leather Gunga Din.
No, I don't think so. I think you got the wrong.
Oh, no, Fuzzy Wuzzy. That's right. That's Fuzzy right. Wuzzy. On a spree.
At home in the Sudan.
That's right. That places him. You're a poor benighted heathen, but a first-class fighting man, and so forth. How about a brother to the ox? Who was that? Mr. Kieran.
The man with the hole.
The man
by Edwin Markham.
Yes. Remember the lines in which a brother to the ox...
Who loosened and let down that brutal jaw and all the rest of it.
Stolid and stunned, the brother to the ox, who loosened and let down this brutal jaw. I think you got one wrong on that, gentlemen. And Miss Newt, that sends $25 to Miss Newkirk and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica with the thanks of Lucky Strike. Now, how about this one from Margaret E. Santee of Cedar Falls, Iowa? I think we ought to get all on this, too. Now, suppose your forebears had settled in each of these villages, the names of which I shall give you. You had remained in these villages. Where would you now live? In the first case, suppose your ancestors had settled at Yerba Buena. Where would you now be living if you hadn't moved? Yerba Buena. Miss Lee?
How do you spell it?
I think it's San Francisco.
Don't go any further. That's quite right. Do you want to spell it for Mr. Adams?
No.
Don't care.
He wins.
All right. Yes, now called San Francisco. Now, if they had settled at Fort Duquesne, Mr. Bromfield.
Pittsburgh,
yes. And suppose they had settled at another fort, Fort Orange. You would now live where, Mr. Kieran?
In Albany.
In Albany, yes, quite right. That apparently was too easy for you. How about this one from Grover Smith of Atlanta? This is all about villains, famous villains of literature. What was the fate of each of them? Let's get 3 out of 4 on this. Uriah Heep, what happened to him? Maybe we ought to clear up the identity of Mr. Heap. Who is Uriah Heap, Mr. Kieran?
Well, Uriah Heap was the Wrigley villain in David Copperfield, who was finally caught and exposed by Micawber.
Now, what happened to him finally?
He got his comeuppance.
He got his comeuppance, as Mr. Adams reminds us, and the comeuppance...
I think they let him off.
Oh, no, they didn't. No.
Well, I mean, they got the money all away from him.
But they didn't let him off. Dickens usually let off most of his people, but in this case...
he went to jail.
He did indeed, Mr. Adams. He went to jail under a life sentence, as a matter of fact, for both forgery and theft. Don't know if we ought to count that right or wrong.
Well, I was wrong.
I think we ought to count that wrong. Thank you, Mr. Chair. How about Iago? Iago, what happened to him? Mr. Chairman, do you want to pick that one? All right.
He died. He died the death of a villain.
He died under what circumstances did he die? By the way, who was Iago, Mr. Kieran?
Well, he was a villain in Othello, the Moor of Venice.
Yes. And what was the form of his death? Remember that? You say he died, was it as a result of an accident or?
No, he died in a sword fray.
No, I don't think so. Unless I'm wrong.
Well, then he took poison.
No. He was led away to torture. and presumably to death, to be executed by the authority of the state.
Wrong again.
Well, I may be wrong here, Mr. Kieran. I've been wrong much more often than you have. But that's what the information that I'm supplied with says. I have to lean on that. How about Mr. Hyde of the well-known firm of Jekyll and Hyde? What happened to him? Did he come to a happy end? Any ideas? Well, we've lost the $25 anyway. You can guess wildly if you wish.
I'm the faintest idea.
Have any idea at all? Would you
might have been cured.
Pardon?
You might have been cured.
Maybe in the movie. I don't think so.
I didn't see the movie.
Commit suicide. I don't know what happens to Jekyll, but Mr. Hyde commits suicide. And finally, Gessler. Mr. Kieran.
Gessler, I think, was shot.
Yes.
With an arrow.
Yes, by whom?
By W. Tell.
Yes, by W. Tell. Yes, Gessler was shot from ambush by William Tell. Well, that sends $25 to Mr. Grover Smith and the set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike. How about this one? From E.J. Donegan of this city. Can you give me, let's say, four people, real people or people that you find in fiction, whose last names describe any kind of weather? Whose last names would give you a... Mr. Adams.
Claude Rains.
Claude Rains would be a very good one. Claude Rains, the motion picture actor and stage actor. How about another? Any kind of weather. Mr. Bromfield.
Mary Tempest.
Mary Tempest. Very good. Yes, that gives us rain and tempest. Think of any others. Well, how about Edward...
Carmel Snow.
Carmel Snow, yes, the editor. Very good. Think of any others. Edward Everett Hale, the author of The Man Without a Country, would be one. Think of any... We have to get one more, I think. Mr. Adams, is that your hand up? No, just a nervous...
No,
picture.
Just thinking.
The chief character, Mr. Kieran, in Jules Verne's... Around the World in 80 Days.
Phineas Fogg.
Phineas Fogg, yes. I think I supplied that.
I think you helped me quite a little bit.
We do work together. I have to get one legitimate one from you. How about, there's a novelist, died a few years ago, comes from your part of the country, Mr. Brownfield. A woman novelist, very good one, named Zona...
Gale.
Gale, yes.
this part of the country.
Well, it's the Middle West.
Isn't Wisconsin
more or less part of the Middle West?
Not his part.
Well, I wouldn't be so provincial.
He's
the Middle West is a large, large place. I've only got three so far.
Well, Mr. Fair was a famous miner, but I can't remember his first name.
Mr. Who?
Fair.
Of Colorado.
Called the Colorado Mine.
San Francisco and Colorado.
Are you all working together and helping us, please? I'll accept Mr. Fair, and that gets us by. Too bad.
Meriwether Lewis.
That's a very good one, except it's his first name.
Lewis and Clark.
Yes, Lewis and Conger. How about Reginald McAvery's question? This comes from Toronto, Canada. It's about memorable meetings between famous people. Get 2 out of 3. What meeting occurred on a narrow road between Thebes and Delphi? Mr. Bromfield.
Oedipus and the Sphinx, wasn't it?
I don't think it was Oedipus and the Sphinx. No. Half of that's right.
Well, then it was Oedipus and his mother.
No, that's wrong, too. Now, you've got the Sphinx, the mother, you've got practically the whole family. Mr. Kieran?
He probably met his father then.
Yes, that's right.
Get there, baby.
He killed his father. He didn't know who he was. Right.
Yes, isn't that the point of the whole Oedipus story, that Oedipus and...
What was his father told him that. That's where I got mixed up.
That's right. Well, you had the whole story in mind. You just got the wrong road, Mr. Brownfield. Seems to me I have to count that wrong, though.
I think so.
Technically. Now, let's get the next two right. What meeting occurred on a raft in a river? A famous meeting, Mr. Kieran.
That was the treaty in one of the Napoleonic campaigns, I believe.
That's quite right.
Beresina, was it?
Who are the two characters involved?
Well, Napoleon was one,
that's
and
right.
The Tsar of Russia.
Yes. Met on a raft on the river Niemen at Tilsit. Tsar Alexander I. Now, what memorable meeting occurred at a public place in Freeport, Illinois? In Freeport, Illinois. Mr. Adams?
I should think probably that was Lincoln and Douglas.
Yes, Lincoln and Douglas would be quite right. They debated at Freeport, Illinois. But that gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from Mrs. R.L. Eisenberg of Brooklyn, New York? Now, this is a four-part question. Get three if you can. In what works of literature or the movies do these business exchanges take place? In the first case, someone pays about $60 for a typewriter. Where? Miss Leach.
The 12-pound look.
That's right, the 12-pound look. In another case, $75 is paid for a second-hand truck. Mr. Bromfield.
Is it the Joad family?
Yes, the Joad family in what novel?
Ah.
The GMW.
Not GTW, but the Grapes of the Grapes of Wrath. Yes, that's right. Okay. The Grapes of Wrath by Mr. Steinbeck. Where do you find a bride being paid for at the rate of $10 a pound? $10 a pound for a bride. Mr. Adams?
The opening chapter of The Mayor of Casterbridge.
Well, now, there is a sale of a wife in The Mayor of Casterbridge by Thomas Hardy, but he wouldn't be paying $10 a pound or selling her for $10 a pound because he didn't have that kind of coinage in Great Britain where the story takes place.
Maybe it's 10 pounds I'm thinking of.
Well, now, it's possible. 10 pounds? No, you'll find it in The Bride Came COD, a movie in which Miss Davis and James Cagney appear. Mr. Cagney, I believe, pays $10 a pound for Miss Davis, which is a very low quotation. That's one wrong. Where would you find $4 being paid for two complimentary tickets to a V.I. Sing? Well, it's in What Makes Sammy Run, a novel of now selling very well. That sends $25 to Mr. Eisenberg, plus a set of the encyclopedia. And now Mr. Cross reminds us of a rather roundabout compliment paid him not so long ago.
Mr. Fadiman, I was actually complimented on not being a good talker. After a recent Information Please broadcast, a gentleman said this to me. Mr. Cross, you never try to talk us into believing Luckies are a better cigarette. You give us facts and figures. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I always believe in letting facts and figures speak for themselves. Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. And 1,000 words couldn't tell you that as effectively as these simple facts. Last season, the American Tobacco Company paid 27% more than the market average at Cambridge, Virginia, 34% more at Mebane, North Carolina, and so on at market after market all over the South. We consistently pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos, and the best we buy goes into Lucky's. No wonder that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1. In a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. So next time, ask for Lucky Strike.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out $100 and 4 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Miss Leach, and thank you, Mr. Bromfield, for joining Lucky Strike's party tonight. Next week, Mr. Levant, Mr. Kieran, and Mr. Adams will be on deck. And as our special extra guest, we welcome Stephen Vincent Benet, distinguished poet and author of The Devil and Daniel Webster, shortly to be seen as a movie called All That Money Can Buy. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. And if the question stump our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica.